Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of IFT's Food Disruptors. In this podcast series, we bring you thought-provoking conversations from some of the most innovative voices in the science of food and beyond. Each month, our guests discuss the ever-changing intersections of entrepreneurship, innovation, science, and the future of food. Last month, we discussed the challenges and exciting opportunities of starting a food startup, and this month, we'll explore how changes in the industry are impacting the current and future job market, including compensation and benefits. Our experts will also share some go-to tips to help you advance your career. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden, and today we're joined by Maura McGrath, president and founder of Opus International Incorporated, an executive search firm specializing in the food science industry. And we're also joined by John Mossman, partner at MK and Associates Incorporated, a full-service professional search firm. John's expertise focuses on technical and operations management areas of the food industry. Maura, John, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So first, I'd like to take a moment to let both of you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience working with professionals in the science of food. Maura, let's start with you.
Hi, Matt. Well, I've been recruiting in food science since 1991 and started my own business, Opus International, in 93. My degree is from Cornell in hotel administration. Now, I studied food science in college, but I wasn't very good at it. But I always loved the food industry. So when I started recruiting in food science, I felt like I was home. We at Opus place scientists in research and development and quality assurance roles around the country and some in Canada, from the senior scientist to the VP or chief technical officer level. We work primarily on the CPG side, some ingredients, with both the very large manufacturers as well as some of the small ones, but almost all in technical roles.
That's great. John, how about you?
Well, I've been a recruiter longer than I care to admit, but I will say that we started MK & Associates in 1990. We work with companies that manufacture food or food ingredients, and we place a fairly wide range of technical and operations management personnel. About 60% of our business would be technical in R&D and QA, and have been involved as a result of that with IFT for a long time. And actually, I'm currently the chairman of the Pittsburgh section of IFT.
Great. I did an internship at Pittsburgh one summer. It was really fun. Great place. So both of you have been involved in sort of the science of food job market for several years. And John, maybe let's start with you. How have you seen the job market for food scientists, maybe in the technical side, but also in any other aspects of the business? How have you seen the job market evolve in the last 15 to 20 years?
Actually, a huge amount of evolution in that period of time, but I'll try to focus on a couple of things that I think are particularly pertinent. One key thing that I've observed is it's no longer enough just to be a good scientist. These people need to understand the business impact of what they do, and they need to be able to work functionally. So I've seen a significant impact also of all the food regulatory changes that, you know, started with the HACCP and SQF and FSMA and, you know, all the other alphabet soup. But R&D used to be the glamour area and the high-paying jobs, but now that seems to be shifting. There's much more demand in QA, and the QA people seem to have kind of eclipse the R&D folks in terms of their earning potential as well. Another thing that has also impacted, particularly as it relates to the technical kinds of jobs, is stuff like the Research Chefs Association, where they're working to meld the art and the science of food. So now you've got these people that have to have some idea of the culinary art. They certainly have to have the science, and they have to have at least some kind of business understanding to really be able to compete in the market.
That's really interesting. And I like how you kind of preface this with saying that it's no longer good enough just to be a good scientist. Maybe off the top of your head, are there any sort of like soft skills or non-scientific skills that employers are really looking for today?
It seems like almost any position, if somebody has a business degree, it certainly helps. But also, I mean, communication skills are huge. Certainly, time management skills are always very important, but never. I know we're going to come back around to this whole, you know, 3G effect, but the demands of the marketplace are that everybody's trying to get people to do more in less time. So it's kind of all of those things together. And, you know, that add to that this big emphasis on project management. So, you know, can somebody have all of those things? Probably not. I think you have to consider your own bent and personality and then say, okay, do I want to really add to my science business? Do I want to add to my science the ability to manage projects well? Do I want to add to my science the ability to be really good with technology, or some combination of the above? It just seems like, you know, a person has to understand their own bent and then pick something, but just being a scientist isn't enough.
So Maura, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well.
Well, first, I see a lot more women in the industry and moving up the ranks into more senior level roles. I'm being told that the food science departments in the universities are at least 50-50 men to women, and some have more women than men, and that's a big change. I also see, as we all know, that there have been a lot of retirements in the last 10 years, so there's a serious shortage of food scientists. The universities have doubled the number of graduates over the last 10 years, but it still isn't enough. And especially if our clients are looking for someone with 5 or more years of experience, they're hard to find. As a result, salaries have continued to rise to compete in the tight market. And we've seen our clients make offers on the spot to avoid a bidding war. It's a tighter market than ever before.
That's really interesting. So I guess from my own perspective, I've actually seen the size of my program rise here at Ohio State. And so it's interesting that you're noticing that as well. And even being in sort of the job market myself now, I see a lot of people looking for 3 to 5 years of experience. And I guess, what sort of advice would you maybe offer to someone who feels like they might be qualified based off of the job description for those types of jobs, but maybe don't have that 3 to 5 years of experience because they're just coming out of school?
Well, everyone applies for those jobs anyway, even though they're not 3 to 5 years out of school. But we have done, just to get back to the number of students in the universities, OPUS has done a survey the last 12 years over the number of students that have come out of all the IFT-approved food science programs in the U.S. Oh, wow. And the numbers have doubled. They're kind of leveling off. We're just doing the 2018 ones now. But it's still small, very small. And then figure 25% of them go on to graduate school, so that limits it. We have a lot of international students that are in the programs, and they go back to their countries. So it's a small group. Now, when someone has no experience and they apply for a 3 to 5 year job description, I would say, I hope you have a couple of internships to at least show that you have some industry experience, because that would be a plus to the student. But someone who's just worked in the lab and the sensory department for 3 months, that's really not going to fly.
Yeah. Thanks for that. It's just, you know, being out there kind of right now and seeing these job descriptions, it's interesting to kind of see it in the perspective of the larger pipeline. So thanks so much for that. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. So there's been quite a bit of disruption in the food industry, especially in the past probably 5 to 10 years. And, you know, we're seeing changes in not only the food industry itself, but also the ways in which people purchase food. And sort of the foundation and focus of a lot of food businesses has also changed. And I guess my question from all this is, how have these sort of disruptions impacted big food R&D departments and how they source their talent? Maura, let's start with you.
Well, the biggest change I see right now is the focus on innovation. In order to compete, food companies need to have new products, new packaging, really new everything to be on top. I don't believe that the big food industry has changed its ways of sourcing talent, but I do believe that they need more from the scientists than just the ability to reduce costs, do line extensions. As John was talking about, there's more involvement in culinary arts and a business perspective. They also need to be creative, more of a culinary focus. And that seems to be happening.
John, what sort of thoughts do you have to add on that subject?
I've really seen that technology and the availability of information via the internet has really leveled the playing field. It's allowed smaller, more nimble companies to compete with the big companies and often beat them to market. big food is really turning more toward buying innovation, which is where we're seeing all these mergers and acquisitions, which have clearly disrupted the market. The huge amount of data available has altered our buying decisions across the board, and particularly hiring decisions. It just give you an example. In the past, if your toaster broke, you went to Walmart, you looked at the toaster, you picked one, you bought it. The next morning, you had toast. And now we go online, we research toasters, we go over to the Walmart, we investigate the ones we like best, and then we go back home to the internet, find the best deal with the cheapest shipping, order the toast, and a week later, we still don't have toast. You know, so what I'm seeing for big food is that this whole thing has just led to a paralysis by analysis, and jobs that should have been filled in a matter of weeks are not filled for months because the companies are looking for that perfect candidate that simply doesn't exist. In the meantime, it's costing them money every day that that job's left open. They just seem like they've lost any sense of urgency to hire, and they've become immune to the idea that, you know, that these jobs are left open.
That's interesting. And so I guess along this same line, you know, we have these large shifts taking place in the food industry. So what sort of changes do we see happening in the next 5 years or even 10 to 15 years? John, I don't know if you have any thoughts to start on that.
Millennials are having a huge impact on society and particularly on the food industry, because while they can be fiercely loyal, they're very concerned about what they eat, where it comes from, and how it gets to them. One of the things I've noticed just recently is we're starting to hear people using the term maker rather than manufacturer, because the millennials care about who makes what they eat and how they make it. And, you know, earlier we talked about this whole 3G effect thing. Here in Pittsburgh, the purchase of Heinz by 3G Capital is turning out to be actually a great thing for the food industry in Pittsburgh, because there's a significant number of food professionals that were either let go or left voluntarily as a result of that buyout. And it's led to a resurgence of small upstart food makers in the Pittsburgh area. And these are not like mom and pop butchers and bakers and pizza shops. These are bright, energetic professionals who are building legitimate food and beverage companies. And recently, sort of in conjunction with IFT, started to help some of these local companies build a regional network so that they're sharing information and contacts and marketing efforts and best practices across the board. So it goes back to that thing where I think more and more innovation is going to come from smaller companies.
That's really interesting that you say that and give that the example of Pittsburgh, because we see, you know, in the news, especially if you're in the food science circle, you see some of these larger acquisitions that end up with a lot of layoffs. And so it's interesting to see sort of how, or hear how Pittsburgh has sort of rebounded in that sense. And it's created this culture of smaller companies that are innovative kind of starting up. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I see these people finding their entrepreneurship deep down inside.
Huh. I had no idea that was going on. That's fascinating. Maura, what sort of thoughts do you have to add to this?
Well, I look at this from a different perspective. I think that the shifts are happening now and they will continue. With FSMA in play as an example, this has caused a tremendous amount of changes in the smaller companies' food safety policies to get up to speed. The larger companies who use co-packers outside the U.S. are changing their food safety policies from having those co-packers police themselves to setting up stronger international procedures and regulatory audits. As far as the industry changing with Amazon getting in the picture and more companies like Blue Apron getting traction, that won't be going away. Some of these options have been available in Japan for several years and it's thriving. In the US, our population is getting older and not having to go to the grocery store could be very attractive to a lot of people. On the other hand, I don't think the grocery store will ever go away. You'll just have to be more competitive price-wise with other options available. In my opinion, these changes will become the norm for the future.
And so I guess the real question is, you know, how do you both see these shifts really impacting that future job market for professionals in the science of food? And what sort of opportunities and even challenges do you think people should be aware of? John, let's start with you.
Like 15 to 20 years ago, if a person had more than two or three jobs on their resume and stayed in those jobs less than 3 years, they were a job hopper. Now clients are saying, hey, they've only seen how one or two companies do things. Why did they stay so long? You know, food science professionals need to view their career as their brand. They need to build their brand value so they're always employable. Their career security is in their value, not in a particular job or a particular employer.
Mara, what thoughts do you have on that?
Well, I see these shifts impacting the future job market in a very positive way. As we say in our office, everyone has to eat. That's never going to go away. It's wonderful that the U.S. is thinking about more healthy foods with a farm-to-table mentality. Frankly, it's about time. If our scientists can create healthier products that taste good and are reasonably priced, these are terrific changes. And food scientists will be in the thick of that change. I don't really see challenges, only the change in and of itself is a challenge.
And I do feel, though, that especially in the food industry, there might be some unique challenges that professionals face sort of within our industry, and perhaps they are opportunities. But are there some unique challenges for professionals working in the science of food? Maura?
Well, food scientists work hard. There's a lot of long days, and for some of them, there's a lot of travel. This can be very difficult for the scientists and for the family of the scientists. Also, unfortunately, the food industry corporate headquarters are spread across 50 states. Relocation is an issue because our clients are all over the place. Moving someone to Battle Creek, Michigan or Buffalo, New York is a real challenge. Yet those opportunities can be very rewarding. One of the biggest challenges I see is moving ahead in one's career without having to relocate. We see that those scientists who are willing to relocate seem to have a much better career path than those who are not.
And John, what about you? What do you see as some of the unique challenges that food science professionals face?
You know, to Maura's point, I think that millennials are more concerned about their quality of life. They have a high degree of importance on family. So, some of them are not as willing to relocate as they might have been in the past. I think they need to be realistic when they're entering a career choice, you know, to realize that if they want to be in the food industry, they're going to have to live where the food industry is. And, you know, so it may mean that they have to think about where they want to put down roots before they do it.
Mm-hmm. And so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the recent March 2018 Food Technology Magazine Salary Survey article, one of the ones that I look forward to every other year. Maura, was there anything in there that surprised you?
Well, first, I was happy to see that women's salaries are improving, although frankly, I never had a client offer a woman a lower salary than a man. Salaries go up in time, and since it's a tight market, our clients are forced to reevaluate their salary structure. Nothing really surprised me. I was happy to see that most food scientists were content with their career choice and their day-to-day roles. Stress was an issue, but I don't know of a job that isn't stressful. There's stress in all careers, mine and John's included.
What about you, John?
I guess I would start by saying I think it's inherently difficult to construct a salary survey that's really meaningful. And I feel like IFT tried to segment and categorize the data into meaningful groupings. And as I look through it, the data seems to support my belief that those in positions that demonstrate broader business knowledge are paid more. And I certainly would also agree that it's encouraging to see that the gender gap is disappearing.
And so what sort of maybe trends that you're seeing, because they do show data across time as well, and you're likely familiar with previous surveys, what sort of trends are making you optimistic or pessimistic for the job market? John?
I guess I'm an optimist by nature, but I'm generally optimistic. As Maura pointed out earlier, people have to eat. And I think that the face of the industry is changing because a lot more of the innovation is coming from small and medium-sized companies. And I think that that fits well with the millennials. So I think what we're going to see is that in general, these people are going to have more jobs on their resume through the course of their career. And as a result of that, they're also going to see their salaries continue to improve.
Maura, how about you? What sort of trends are you seeing, and they make you feel optimistic or pessimistic?
Well, I too am very optimistic about where the food industry is going. There are all kinds of health issues out there, and the food industry is being blamed, and in some cases, rightly so. Thoughts of nutrition seem to be more of a trend, which needs to be part of the product development equation. 10 to 20 years ago, there was no talk of having a nutrition scientist on staff in way too many companies. The food industry has a responsibility to their consumers, and they're taking it much more seriously. How the food is delivered to me is a blip on the screen. It's the healthiness of the products themselves that need to be addressed. And that's what's happening, and I'm glad to see it.
So do either of you have any go-to tips for professionals when it comes to advancing their career? John, let's start with you.
Back to my earlier point about building their own brand and building their career, I'd say two critical things. One is document. Document everything that you do, all of your accomplishments, all of your victories, so that when you need to give your elevator pitch, you're ready. And when a good opportunity presents itself, you don't have to take a week to update a resume, that you've got documentation of what you've done. And even if it's not to make a job change, when you sit down to your review with your boss, you need to be prepared and come in and say, you know, here, this is what I feel good about that I've done this year. And then the other thing, and this was reinforced recently for me, our last Pittsburgh Section IFT meeting, past president of the IFT, John Copeland, was there and spoke, and he talked about the importance of networking, you know, and it becomes easier all the time with technologies like LinkedIn, because one of the things that I say around my office all the time, and I try to tell the people at IFT, is that all of us together are smarter than any of us by ourselves. So in this technology age, you don't have to have all the answers. You just need to know where to find them. And that's often a result of networking. So that's the two things I would say. Document what you do and work on building that network.
And I guess with in terms of keeping track, I think there's like space even on like LinkedIn to do that type of stuff. Would you recommend that people kind of use that sort of social technology to keep track? Or is that more of a journal it by yourself and just use it to talk about and update your resume?
I would say you need to do both. First of all, I would never rely on LinkedIn being there tomorrow or, you know, any of the other social medias, some of the pressures that they're getting from society and the press and whatever.
Right.
That's the other thing. I think many people have the idea that the only value in LinkedIn is if you're looking for a job. And the fact of the matter is that LinkedIn is a tremendous professional networking tool. And it's totally different from Facebook. You know, you don't see people posting, pictures of their new puppy or, you know, what stuff like that on LinkedIn. There's a place for that. That's called Facebook. So I do think that it's a good idea to keep your LinkedIn profile updated and to make a conscious effort to keep building that network, because it is an important tool. But you probably want to have more details somewhere else that you're keeping track of. And even if it's just for your periodic review with your boss or just for yourself to know, you know, am I really moving ahead? Am I become stagnant? One of the things that I see a lot of times in candidates and resumes is that, you know, some people have done more in 5 years than other people do in a career. They just seem to have the same year or two of experience 10 times over, rather than really progressing, moving forward, adding to their toolkit, that sort of thing. So, I would say that those two things, you need to do both. You need to keep track of it for yourself in your own resume file or something like that, but also keep your LinkedIn profile fresh.
That's great advice. Maura, what about you? What are some of your go-to tips for people looking to advance their career?
I would agree with what John just said, and I have two more thoughts. I would recommend that when asked to volunteer to do something at work, join a different project group, for example, do it, even though it's not in your wheelhouse. In fact, it's even better if it's not in your wheelhouse because then you're learning something new. Your survey mentioned that this is something food scientists appreciate in their jobs, and this is an obvious way to be more well-rounded and more recognized when the next opportunity opens. Secondly, don't jump from company to company so many times in your career. This seems to be a trend, and although the candidates seem to think it's okay, it really does shut doors. Our clients still will choose candidates who have a steady career history. Some of our clients won't even look at candidates who have jumped more than once in a five-year period. So I would say stay at 5 years at your current job, and you'll be golden. And at the end of the 5 years, your resume will be on the top of the pile when you're ready to make a change.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think you hear about, and I think we talked earlier about millennials kind of jumping around a little bit more as we're moving into the job market. And, you know, so 5 years is kind of a good rule of thumb, you would say?
I would say 5 years is perfect. We have a client right now that if someone isn't with a company 5 years, don't even bother to submit their resume.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, I certainly didn't mean to imply earlier that, you know, the job hopping was a good idea. I think there's a balance. And I also think that you have to look at what's happening. You know, because if you can make your career continue to progress and stay at the same company, that's great. That's wonderful. You know, and I know that my clients appreciate seeing that in a candidate as well. So it's about making sure that your career continues to progress. If you can do that, staying put, that's certainly all the better.
Right. Well, I guess I've noticed too, so I have some friends that are working more in sort of the startup area of the food industry. We see a lot of startups coming up. And they seem to move around a little more than someone who's working, say, at more like an established company. Do either of you have any thoughts on that end of things?
I think it's always important to focus on the things that you can control in life. Working with a startup certainly always has an element of risk. I mean, the other thing is that with more and more food companies being owned by private equity companies that often have a sort of a five-year plan, lots of things that can happen that are completely outside of the candidate's control. So, I mean, that's another factor.
Right.
And in some cases, that's part of the risk. You know, you plan for that. Some of the higher level positions that I work with, you know, people that I place that go to work for a company knowing that this is owned by a private equity firm, and in the next 3 to 5 years, something's going to happen. It might be an IPO. It might be that they get sold and they're able to have an equity position as part of their package. And that's part of the risk return. They realize that they have a greater risk of being unemployed depending on the exit strategy for the investors. But they also recognize that there might be some financial benefit to doing that. So there's just a lot of factors that all come into play. So there's no sort of one size fits all answer.
You also need to think about where the person is in their career. If they're right out of school, I would recommend going with a bigger company because they'll have a lot better training, better opportunity. And if you have Kraft Heinz on your resume versus ABC Liquors, you're going to have a better chance to move forward. But someone who's more senior in their career, of course, they're more willing to take the risk because what John said, more money, more opportunity, bigger advancement. That's what you have to take into consideration. But the first 5 years of someone's career, if you can find something where you want in an area of the country where you want to be, and then we go back into relocation issues, I would recommend going with a bigger company.
Really, there are just so many factors, and I'm even seeing that now as I kind of navigate this space.
One other thing that I have watched for many years, and it seems like it gets worse rather than better. I mean, when I went to college, my dorm room was like 10 by 20. I had a bed and a desk. Now, you know, these kids are practically living in a luxury condo on campus. College has become a real insulator. And I find that a lot of these young people get their first job and they think there's something wrong with the job or the company or whatever. So they make a job change quickly and they find out that it's not the job or the company, it's the real world. So I've got a lot of companies that, smaller companies that are reluctant to hire fresh grads because they're afraid they won't stick around. And they like to hire somebody who's on like what they call a first or second bounce. You know, they take that first job and it's hard and they think it must be the job. So they take a second job and they find out that it's still hard because that's the reality of the world. And then they may or may not be satisfied, but usually if they take one more bounce, they've figured it out and they'll find a job at a place where they can stay. Hopefully that happens on the first bounce, but a lot of times it takes till the second bounce. So that's the other thing I would say, you know, give yourself a reality check. Believe it or not, employers expect you to show up to work on time every day and do your job.
Well, and I guess that's where, at least for students, where some internships can come in handy. You know, if you can get one or even two internships, you'll have maybe a little bit of a better perspective, I imagine, of kind of what the reality is.
Absolutely. And internships on your resume certainly make you more marketable.
Absolutely.
So let's end this episode on a high note, because I think when people are looking around to advance their career or find a job, it can be a little bit overwhelming. But, you know, what gives both of you hope for the future of our profession? Maura, let's start with you.
Food science is a wonderful career. So many university graduates who are now unable to find jobs, yet our food science grads have a few offers before they leave campus. The salaries are, in my mind, very good. As I said, everyone has to eat, and with the trends leaning towards a more healthy product, there's only one way to go, and that's up. It doesn't matter whether the food will be bought in a store or delivered to your home. Change is good. I'm very optimistic that there will always be a demand for good food scientists in the technical areas of the food industry. That only means more job opportunities, both as a new grad or as someone who's been out in industry for 5 to 20 years. It's a clean, honest business, and I've been very proud to be part of it in some way.
That's great. John, what about you? What makes you hopeful for the future of our profession?
Well, certainly what I've been experiencing with the Pittsburgh Food and Beverage Makers Network gives me a great deal of hope for the future of the industry, because these people are excited about what they're doing. They're innovative, and they're demonstrating what I see in more and more companies, that success as a company is not just measured by the bottom line. And it kind of goes back to something that Maura mentioned earlier as well, you know, about giving back to society, about being, you know, a responsible corporate citizen. I'm seeing all of that, and it's coming in, you know, in balance. I mean, these people are entrepreneurs, they're building companies, they want to make money, they want to be successful, but it's not a at all cost kind of situation. They want to have lives. A lot of them are involving a spouse or other family members in these businesses. They're allowing for giving back to the community. So I just, you know, I feel like in general, there's a lot of positive things happening, and it's happening more at the grassroots of the food industry. And a lot of these smaller companies that used to struggle are able to compete and compete pretty quickly.
Yeah, definitely an exciting time to be in the business. So Maura and John, thank you so much for your time and your thoughts. You've really provided us a lot to consider as we navigate the profession of the science of food. And I'd also like to give a big thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Now, I mentioned IFT's 2017 employment and salary survey results that are featured in the March issue of Food Technology Magazine, and the full report's also available now. If you're interested in learning more about the report, visit ift.org/salary report for details. If you're enjoying Food Disruptors, please let us know by leaving a review on iTunes or by connecting with IFT. You can find us at IFT on Twitter and by searching the Institute of Food Technologists on Facebook and LinkedIn. We post regularly about news and information on upcoming episodes of Food Disruptors, so please give us a follow. You can also visit www.ift.org for content as it relates to the science of food, the food industry, and food innovation. Thanks for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.